You're listening to Well Made, a podcast from Lumi about the future of e-commerce. I'm your host, Stefan Ango. Rachel Blumenthal, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So you're the founder of Rockets of Awesome. I've seen you describe it as a personal shopping service and apparel brand for kids. What does that mean?
What it means is that we design really, really awesome kids' clothes that magically both kids and parents like, which is hard to come by because often the kids love it and it's cringeworthy to the parents. So super cool kids' clothes that are really comfortable, have unique design details, very accessibly priced. And we deliver it to our customers' homes completely personalized based on every last preference you share with us about your kids.
So is it fair that to say it's sort of like Stitch Fix or Trunk Club, but for kids, for boys and girls?
Correct. And probably the biggest differentiator is that the products that we're sending to our customers are our own Rockets of Awesome branded product.
I have a lot of questions about that, actually, because you guys design such exciting and fun and interesting designs. I was actually curious about that, whether everything that you send out is custom made or if you guys send out anything that is from other companies.
We've tested a couple of sort of like third parties or private label companies in the past and have found for a number of reasons that we always end up coming back to exclusively our own product. So we have a full design and product development team in our office in New York. Designers that come from really amazing, men's, women's, children's wear brands that everyone has heard of. And they are coming up with the concept every season and designing the product and then working with our manufacturers to manufacture the product for us.
I want to get more into that, but I also want to just give people a little bit more about the basics of the company. So you send the box out four times a year with each new season. Basically, it's $150 if you decide to keep everything, but you can send some items back. Is that right?
Yes, correct. So, I mean, basically what we did is, as a parent myself, what I realized is that my kids were outgrowing their clothes with really offensive frequency. And I couldn't believe how much time I was spending sort of always digging for stuff that was cool, that wasn't expensive. And what we sort of recognize is that parents were shopping every single season at the beginning of the season. They were doing a big bulk purchase. And then inevitably throughout the season, needs were coming up and they were sort of running into a store going online to fill in based on, ripping the favorite sweatpant or a special occasion where they needed a specific outfit. And we were seeing that there were so many innovative companies delivering amazing solutions to the consumer. And nobody was focusing on mom, who was the busiest of all consumers. And why wasn't anyone trying to make her life easier? And if you're like me, I'm always looking for like, what is the life hack for everything that I'm doing? And how can I make my life easier? And so we wanted to design a service and a solution that mirrored her existing behavior, but made every aspect of it more awesome. And so we get to know our customers, they fill out a quiz, they tell us what their kids like and dislike. The moms also tell us what they like and dislike. And with that information, we're actually able to send our customers a preview of these are the 8 items that we're going to send you. What do you think? And our customers are able to give us feedback, swap out items that they don't like or they don't need. And then we send the box to them. And that box arrives in their home. They have a fashion show with their kids or their kids just get super opinionated, as kids do, and decide what they're keeping and send back what they don't want. If customers keep everything in the box, so 8 items, then they receive a discount anywhere between like 25 to 30% off. So it's $150 for those 8 items. And then they have an e-commerce experience on our website where they can purchase a la carte throughout the season. So they can buy 1 item, they can buy 15, whatever they want. The end-to-end experience is really designed to make it fun for parents and kids.
Is there a specific age range that you're looking at or that you're targeting?
Yes, so we make products sizes 3 to 12. So it's usually, a 2, 2.5-year-old to a 10-year-old or so. boys and girls, and we're designing into sort of multiple style profiles so that we have enough variety within our assortment to appeal to a wide range of customers.
You mentioned that in the quiz, you have a quiz for the parents and then you have a quiz for the kids. That's a really fascinating thing. I've noticed that your marketing on the blog, for example, seems to be more targeted towards moms in particular, or parents in particular. Do you try to get kids involved in the marketing, or are you specifically trying to speak directly to the parents?
We think about every touch point and really have a conversation of saying, you know, is this for the mom or is this for the kids? And I say mom because 97% of our customers are women, but we call mom like whoever's sort of like playing the traditional mom role in the relationship. So sometimes it is dad or the grandparents or a family member, but you know, we think about what are the touch points and who are we communicating with? So for the onboarding flow where you're filling out the quiz and giving us your credit card and your shipping address information, that is mom and sometimes the kids, particularly if the kids are old enough. When it comes to the box arriving in the home, that is almost entirely designed for the kids. So it is this like giant, beautiful blue box, as you're very familiar because you guys manufacture it for us. But this beautiful blue box that has a handle on it, so it's easy to carry. We don't have a ton of tape on it, so you don't need a knife or a scissor to open the box. It's really easy. When you open it, it has a full bleed illustration on the inside. So kids automatically take out the crayons and the markers and start, you know, making an art project out of it. It has, you know, this really fun silver mylar foil on the inside that wraps the clothes. We actually don't wrap the clothes in an individual like plastic bags because we try to make it as easy as possible to just get in there and start touching and trying on the clothes. Whereas like, you know, the checkout process on our website where you're telling us what you're keeping and what you're returning and confirming how much we're going to charge you, that we really gear towards the mom. So it really depends on the touch point and who we're talking to. But I think that realizing that you have two customers, the mom and the kid, is really complex and really interesting. I think that's what makes sort of our job in building a brand that speaks to both types of consumers really fun.
Yeah, I think when I think about Rockets of Awesome, there's just the visuals that pop up in my head are very quirky and eccentric and fun. And I think that's such a hard thing to do across everything that you're doing, from the web experience. The name of the company itself is really fun. The branding, the box designs, the clothing designs. How do you make sure all of that still feels cohesive? How did you go about like building that voice?
It started in my head. I had a really, really, really clear point of view of what our brand was, what it stood for, you know, even to the extent of, you know, if our brand was a person, like what dessert would they order after dinner, or what movie would they go to, or what vacation would they go on, or what car would they drive? So I really like to create sort of like personas out of brands to help you really dimensionalize who they are and what they represent. Because I really believe a brand is another form of almost like a living human being that you're growing and developing over time. In many ways, as a parent, the brand really stemmed for what I was so hungry for. You know, I think what was clear to me in building this brand was that there weren't any brands that were speaking to this generation and the future generations of parents. And so many just sort of forgot that now that we sort of had that label of being a parent or mom, that we weren't cool, we weren't sophisticated, we weren't sort of a savvy or demanding consumer, and that we were very sort of like mom jeans, you know? And I was like, hey, we're cool. Like we care about things. We're the same person that was buying Glossier and Outdoor Voices and Allbirds and Warby Parker, like, you know, the day before we became a mom. And why isn't anyone speaking to us like we're that person anymore? And so I think it just created an opportunity to frankly build, you know, a brand that I wish was speaking to me as a consumer.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Do you see the kids nowadays are so like plugged into technology and phones and all that stuff, especially probably your older kids that are involved in Rockets of Awesome. Do you see that as a part of the experience? Are they the ones like going and sharing? Do they share what they got from Rockets of Awesome on social media? Are they part of the whole mechanism of how you grow your company?
You know, our kids, so our age range sort of taps out around, you know, age 10 or 11. And so I think typically it's around that age where kids start to get their own devices. So, you know, our age range of our kids definitely, you know, are not on Instagram. They're not following our Instagram feed and sharing and commenting and things like that. That being said, they're definitely the kids that have grown up in the age of YouTube, and they're all watching, you know, the unboxing videos and the mini YouTubers who are creating videos and telling stories about, you know, their life. And so I think that these kids definitely have an instinct about wanting to do unboxings. And, you know, that was really fun for us to see that we never had to say to our customers, like, show us your box or, you know, share your box on social media with us. And so they are instinctively doing unboxings, and the kids are really taking the lead, and they're doing that, and they're participating sort of in spreading the word from that perspective.
Yeah, one of my friends runs a company called DIY.org, which I think is such a cool, it's sort of like the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts of the internet. And it's been really fascinating to watch, but I've wondered whether that model works. They started the company, I think, almost 10 years ago or something at this point. But it's very Web 2.0-ish in a way, because it's kind of like an online forum. But I was always fascinated by their ability to bring some of that challenge of, like, both the kids and the parents together. And I think there's something really cool about the opportunity of creating an online community of kids. I wonder if there's something like that in the future for you guys, being able to, like, bring together the kids' side of what you guys are doing so that they can talk to each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're already starting to see that very organically, and that the name Rockets of Awesome doesn't have sort of like a space or a NASA reference to it. You know, the name really represents the kids. And so what inspired us from the very beginning is that kids have this magical, unpredictable confidence that is so incredible. And how do we bottle that confidence and joy and really celebrate it? And so we actually say that the kids are rockets of awesome. Like, that spirit, that energy, that confidence is just so over the top awesome. You know, really sort of giving them the tools through the clothes to be able to be individuals and really sort of create personas for themselves. I mean, I think that is part of the reason that the business and the brand and the apparel has resonated so much with customers, is that kids really feel like it's their brand. They feel like, because mom didn't select the items in the box, because it's a rocket scientist or an expert or whoever they think, you know, curated that box for them, they really feel like it's their brand and their box. And so they're able to be the ones who are empowered to make the decision when that box arrives in the home. And so they are picking the items that represent who they are, who they want to be. They feel so incredibly confident wearing these clothes, and they're tying their identities to it even at an early age, that, you know, they see other kids on the playground wearing the silver bomber, wearing the graphic tee that, you know, they're familiar with. And they say, like, he's wearing Rockets, she's wearing Rockets, I wear Rockets. Like, we're all part of this cool kids club. And so, you know, we will do sort of certain activations to really be able to give those kids sort of an opportunity to engage or more of a platform to be a part of this community. But, you know, it's something that as we grow the business and as we continue to tell our brand story, we're always strategizing what are those sort of new opportunities to be able to do that for the customer.
So another aspect of Rockets of Awesome is the technology side. You mentioned a little bit about the quiz and the level of personalization that you bring into the whole experience. What are the other parts that might not be so obvious looking from the outside where you've created some innovative technology to support the business?
Yeah, so, you know, I think we often sort of joke that, you know, we are at our roots a technology and data science driven organization that sort of like masks ourselves as a kids' clothing brand. And that's not to sort of discount how important the clothes are, how much, you know, time and resources and energy and commitment we put towards making just really, really special, awesome clothes that are even cool enough that I want to wear as an adult. But really, you know, the algorithms and the data science and what, you know, how we're analyzing the data that our customers are sharing with us really is the secret sauce to what we do. And so the technology enables us to be able to leverage that information that our customers share when they create their, you know, when they fill out the quiz, the information they give us when they return items, when they write in testimonials, the emails that they click on, the items that they purchase out of our e-commerce experience, so on and so forth. All those touch points enable us to deliver a better experience to them, whether it be that it changes the number of items we put in their box, it changes the assortment that we deliver to them, it determines what our design team is designing, what we buy into, the cadence in which you receive your box as a customer, so on and so forth. And so all those touch points are really being truly data science driven to deliver an incredible experience of the customer. And, you know, I think an important call out on the data is that, you know, data can seem really scary and it can seem big brother. And, you know, for us, we spend a lot of time and energy making sure that for every sort of touch point where data is driving a decision or an input, there is an equal sort of counterbalance to real people and emotion behind those inputs and decisions. And so, you know, we have an incredible, incredible customer experience team that, you know, will spend 2 hours on the phone with a customer. We don't view it as, you know, a cost center. We really view it as a critical sort of line of defense with a customer and building a relationship and building trust and giving them the confidence that, you know, if they want to share their Facebook page with us so that we can see what their kids look like to know how to input, you know, the really affect their profile, we're doing it in a way that says, you know what, we're using the information that you're sharing for good reasons. And every single time you share information, you should feel like the services you're receiving from us are more and more personalized.
Are there any specific designs that you can think of or other things, you know, as granular as possible that came from that data?
Good question. Yeah, I mean, I think in a simpler form, when we launched our assortment in our first season, probably about, you know, 10% of the assortment was performance or activewear for boys and girls. And it was something where, you know, we were already seeing that trend in the market, particularly in adults, and knew that there was massive opportunity to be able to serve kids. But we also didn't know as a new brand, you know, would kids want to wear anything that wasn't Nike and Under Armour and, you know, Aviva, which is designed by Lululemon. And also as an early stage business, we also wanted to mitigate as much risk as possible. And so, you know, we put a very, very small assortment into our customers' hands. And what we saw is that we just had tremendous response and keep rate, which is sort of our indicator of sell-through on our product in those performance items, both driven by specific fabrics, silhouettes, and graphics. And now, you know, activewear, I believe, is probably about 25%, if not 30% of our assortment. You know, broadly, that is where the data really drove, you know, specifically which fabrics we would lean into, which graphics, which color palettes, but even, you know, even more broadly, the assortment. There's another product called the Cozy Crew, where we launched, I think, it in three colors in our first season. And it's this magical, magical fabric. It's like the softest fabric you've ever felt. And you are like, I just want to curl up in a ball of this fabric and like never leave my house. And we made it in a girl's sweatshirt in three colors. And it was so incredibly successful. I think we sold through in, you know, a couple of weeks of all three of them that we said, okay, we've got to find out how we can make more of this fabric, how we can make it in patterns we need to be able to print on it. Can we make it in shorts and sweatpants and dresses and skirts? And like, what else can we do with this fabric? And for us, you know, really leaning into the fabric was driven by the comments that we were receiving from customers about this product. They weren't saying like, oh, I love that sweatshirt because like the silhouette is so cool or the color was awesome. It was like, oh my God, that is the softest fabric I've ever felt in my life, and I need more of that. And so for us, it was saying, all right, we've got to lean hard into this fabric, and we need to deliver more of that to our customer.
I think one of the challenges that always comes up in you know, an apparel business or physical product business is just the inventory aspect of things, making sure you always have enough and not too much of anything. Is that something that, because of your business model, you're able to navigate maybe more easily? Or are you able to get feedback from your customers ahead of a release that might inform the volumes that you produce or anything like that?
Yeah, so a combination. So, you know, I think the beauty of being a data-first organization combined with, as a subscription, we have a reoccurring customer. And so with, you know, fair regularity, we know, you know, if you received a box in the fall season, then X percentage are going to receive a box in the winter season. And so we can sort of plan ahead, sort of already knowing who our customer is going to be, whereas, you know, Gap, for instance, like, they don't know with certainty if you're going to walk back into their store, you know, again in winter, right? So part of that is the model enables us to have a little more data about our customer. The way that we're set up around personalization gives us even more significant information about sort of buying behavior. But then, you know, of course, wanting to be as nimble as possible, making sure that our supply chain is built in a way that enables us flexibility to be able to test into products, whether it be a silhouette or a fabric or graphic, and then be able to chase into new product quickly. We also have, you know, an incredibly opinionated and engaged customer who loves giving us feedback. And so we'll often go out to our customers on certain product categories or specific designs on, you know, do you like A or B? You know, if it's B, you know, was it the color? Was it, you know, the length of the t-shirt or whatever it was, to be able to get some sort of like anecdotal feedback from them directionally to know, you know, what products we should even be testing into.
Yeah, I mean, the logistics of everything you're doing is so fascinating to me, because you're offering so much personalization, but at the same time you have to manage your subscribers. And then you've also got this thing which is people can return, you know, however many items. If they get 8 and they like 4, they can return the other 4. How do you manage that aspect of things? When you get all of those returns, what are you able to do with those? Does that go into the products that are available a la carte?
Yeah, so we just continue to cycle our inventory. And we have, you know, we are always trying to optimize for really tight inventory turns. But, you know, the minute that the customer returns the item, assuming that it's in perfect condition, which I think like 99.8% of our items are in perfect condition when they return to the warehouse, that just either goes into the next box or goes into an e-commerce purchase. Even though we have seasonal deliveries where, you know, we're always optimizing for getting it in your home before you have to think about shopping for the season, we are still shipping sort of every single day of the year. So it's not like we only ship out our spring boxes from, you know, X date to X date, and then we're waiting. So that inventory can cycle to the next customer receiving a box.
Was it challenging to find a 3PL or a partner or some sort of fulfillment solution that would allow you to do that whole cycle? Or are you guys doing that yourselves? How did you figure that part out?
We knew that our logistics was going to be fairly complex. It's, we're in the reverse logistics business, meaning that for almost every single thing that we send out, we expect that something will come back to us. You know, when we did our RFP for a 3PL, going to, you know, for everyone that we were speaking to, really clear on what our business model was, what our expectations were, what our inventory turns had to look like. And, you know, certainly trial and error. I think also as a startup, you're like, okay, we need to work with whoever we think can handle us today and grow with us a little bit, but that is cost efficient. And then, you know, someday when we have the scale, you know, we can sort of validate spending more on someone more sophisticated, or, you know, we'll need somebody more sophisticated at that stage. So, you know, we're now at our second 3PL since we launched the business. So definitely with somebody who is an expert in reverse logistics and can handle our scale. But, you know, a lot of trial and error, and more than anything, I think endless communication with our partners to set expectations of like what we think it's going to be, and then every single day of what we're seeing it is, and making sure that we're always in lockstep with them.
So before Rockets of Awesome, you actually founded two other companies. Can you describe a little bit about those businesses and how they've informed what you're doing today, or maybe some of the things that you learned there that you're applying to this business?
Sure. Yeah. So I started my career in luxury fashion at Yves Saint Laurent on the PR side, and was in an incredibly creative environment, but my role wasn't particularly creative. And so I actually made a ring and was wearing it at work one day. And the editors I worked with from Lucky Magazine decided to feature me as a designer. And when you work in the PR and media world, you know, I think you're sort of comfortable and familiar with some of the smoke and mirrors sometimes. And so I just thought it was kind of amusing and I was up for it. And so they featured me in Lucky. And, you know, I think I made one other ring and a pair of earrings for the photo shoot. And about a month later, Daily Candy called me and said, "We want to feature you next week. What is your domain?" And I didn't have one. And so I called a guy that I hadn't seen since I was in middle school, who I heard did, you know, built websites. This was back in 2003. So still sort of in the infancy of sort of small businesses building their own websites. And I had him throw up a landing page with an email address and an image. And that was my website. And Daily Candy hit, and it was an onslaught of buyers and customers and, you know, retailers that wanted this brand that didn't exist. And so I sort of, you know, the sort of age old of fake it till you make it, it really sort of was like hustling on either end, and started doing trunk shows at Henri Bendel. Shopbop picked me up as one of their first jewelry designers. Really started to sort of get a sense that I was onto something. I was also, you know, like 23, 24 years old, so I didn't have a whole lot to lose, but I basically decided to set up shop in my living room. I quit my job and figured I'd go back in 6 months when it didn't work. And, you know, at that point, the only thing I had going for me was that I was totally naive, so I had no idea what the competition really looked like. I had a very strong point of view of this brand and this product line that I was going to deliver to the customer. I created a business model where basically I went and spent, you know, $100 on beads from the bead store at retail. I would make a bunch of jewelry, mark it up, make, you know, some profit, and then go back to the bead store and buy more beads. And so it was a very low overhead business because I was the sales girl, the PR girl, the manufacturer, and the shipper. And, you know, over time, I built that business to be in about 500 retailers worldwide. We did private label for American Eagle, Target, J. Crew, and, you know, had really built it into a real brand and a real business over the course of 8 years. And ultimately decided to license it about 7 years ago because I just felt like I'd hit a learning curve. I wasn't learning and growing anymore and really wanted a new challenge. And at the time, my husband and his friends from business school were building Warby Parker, which is an eyewear brand. And I was really fascinated with sort of the world of tech and startup culture that they were immersed in. And I would follow them to every single conference they would go to and really was just very energized by what I was seeing. And at this, you know, we had just had a baby around the same time. And as I would go to these conferences and have conversations with people about sort of all these terrible business ideas that I had, I would also talk about this frustration that I had with having a new baby and not knowing what to buy, not knowing the categories, the brand, and feeling sort of really uneducated in the space and not understanding why it was so complicated to figure out like which burp cloth or which stroller to buy for my baby. And ultimately ended up building a brand called Cricut Circle, which was a cliff notes for what to buy when you have a baby. Only three products that we recommended in every category, and used very, very early algorithms and quizzes similar to like a, it was a much less sophisticated version of what we do now. But this idea that based on what we knew about you, we could match you with the right stroller or car seat and create the content as a new parent so that you would build trust with us and engage with us and be a part of the community. And as we were building that, what we recognized was that there was this phase where new parents and soon-to-be parents felt utterly clueless and really scared and had no confidence about making a simple decision, like which $7 bib to buy. It was like, if I bought the wrong bib, I wasn't going to go to, my kid wasn't going to go to college. To then this turning point where once you bought the car seat, you bought the stroller, your baby was, you know, of, you know, several months or a year old, you had greater confidence as a parent and you didn't, you weren't as desperate anymore for that information. But the ongoing pain point was that your kids just kept outgrowing their clothes and it never ended and it just kept happening. And the minute you thought that you'd bought them new clothes, they had outgrown them. And there was a tremendous opportunity to really support parents in a need-driven category and make their life easier by really doing that shopping for them and curating the product and delivering great value to them and great service. And so, you know, we ultimately saw an opportunity to deliver greater service and solutions to the customer outside of baby products. And so we really ended up pivoting, you know, the Cricut Circle business to become Rockets of Awesome.
And Cricut Circle was primarily content-based, right?
Correct. Yes.
It's really fascinating to me. Your background has almost like zero overlap with what me and Jesse did with Lumi. But at the same time, I find so many similarities in the sense that with Rachel Lee, you had this experience of having to like you said, build the product, be the shipper, be the whole thing in one person. And that's what Jesse and I did with our first company. And then you started to see that pain point in the market as a mom yourself and decided to go after that and built some of the founding principles of like personalization through a business that is content oriented. So it made the barrier to entry much easier than actually if you had jumped straight into Rockets of Awesome and tried to manufacture products based on that information, that would have been much harder. But it's one of those things where it seems like overnight success, but you've been working on this for like 12 years, basically. You know, like piece by piece.
Totally.
This happens all the time where people come to me and say like, oh, I've been a fan of you since like the beginning. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? Tell me like when, and they say like, oh yeah, 2015 or 2016 when we launched the website. And it's like, yeah, it's really the people who like backed me and Jesse on Kickstarter in 2009. Those are like OG people. I don't know if you run into the similar types of experiences where you just have flashbacks to like 8 years ago when you were assembling necklaces or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I think that, you know, listen, I think that every experience you have not only informs the next experience, but gives you confidence and also starts to really create your reputation for which people know you, right? So, you know, it's one of those things that even if you're in a completely different industry, you know, sort of, again, going back to, you know, what your parents are always told you, which is like, you know, your reputation is everything, and every interaction that you have with somebody, whether you think it's memorable or not, might be remembered, right? So learn from every interaction. And I think what's really been fun for me is I still work with, engage with, connect with people who, you know, girls who I worked with when I was at YSL back in the day, like my first job where we were, you know, straight out of college and we were like the peons of the peons. And now, you know, one's an editor chief of a magazine and one's, you know, running monetization of a media company and so on and so forth. And it's those relationships that have enabled us to all get to where we are today because we've all supported each other along the process and grown up together.
Yeah, it's a really tough thing to hear when you're a young person. And like people say this all the time. And I remember people telling me this, that, you know, you just need to be patient and like put in the work and it'll come. But it kind of is the only answer of like real advice for someone who's young and in their 20s and interested in entrepreneurship. You kind of have to pick something that you like and learn the basics and grind it out and then bang your head against the wall for 10 years. And then eventually, like maybe you'll have a good idea. And like, to me, Rockets of Awesome seems like the like perfect exemplification of all this stuff that you've been working on. I don't know if that mirrors your experience or what you would say to like your 20-year-old self if you were to talk to her.
Well, first of all, you know, if you had told me 10 years ago or 15 years ago that I was going to end up building companies and be an entrepreneur, I would have laughed in your face, because I would have told you that I was completely risk adverse and I was going to climb the ladder and go to business school and then climb the ladder and like run somebody else's company. And I never would have thought that I would have had the propensity for risk that I've built over time. But I also think that, you know, if you look at successful entrepreneurs, what you realize is that one of the secrets to success is actually mitigating risk at every touch point. So at every twist and turn, figuring out how do you take risk and mitigate risk at the same time. And so, you know, even when I look back to my first business, the jewelry business, I never at that time could have gone out and raised the millions of dollars that we've raised with this business, because that would have been really scary for me. I didn't know the first thing about running a business, but what I was comfortable with was going and spending $100 and putting it towards product that I was going to manufacture myself with my hands and then go sell and then make, you know, profit from and then go spend $200. And so, you know, that business was very much a baby steps business in the early years and became more sophisticated as it grew and as I learned. And, you know, that business coupled with, you know, Cricut Circle, we raised, you know, a small amount of venture capital money and started, you know, doing smaller deals with different partners, got us to today where we feel more confident taking bigger risks and bigger swings and, you know, are still trying to mitigate risk at every twist and turn that we make.
Are there risks that you can think of that you took with Rockets that didn't pan out or that you decided to change? Does anything come to mind?
You know, listen, like, I don't think that there's any perfect way, right? And so I would argue that, like, every person you hire is a risk. You know, you're taking a risk of your time and resources on them, and they're taking a risk of their life, on, you know, and their career on you. So I take, you know, every single hire very seriously. I think, you know, something probably more tangible and less serious is, you know, in the beginning, we had these like grand visions of launching with this like crazy bananas video that was going to be like the brand video, and it was going to exemplify who we were and tell our story. And I think because we had such a clear view of what the brand stood for and such big vision of what we wanted the video to be, we bit off more than we could chew. And so we tried to create this crazy bananas video with a very, very small budget, and unfortunately did not become what we wanted it to be or expected it to be. That being said, you could say that that was, you know, a miss or, you know, a failure. At the same time, I think it was a tremendous learning for us. Unfortunately, we're really creative, and so we've been figured out how to, you know, cut it into smaller tidbits of video to use it in different channels that we had originally planned. So I think part of every risk and learning a mistake is also figuring out, you know, what you can do to recover if something doesn't turn out exactly how you expect it to be.
Is that the video that's on your homepage, or is that like an edited version of it?
It's not on our homepage. It's on our like about us page.
Oh, I think I saw it. It's really cool.
It's awesome, but it's, you know, again, like we
sure, it didn't like go viral or take over the internet.
Right, exactly. Like we wanted it to be like the next viral video, right? And like it was not the viral video, but it definitely was a brand moment for us, which has proven to be equally as, or not equally as, but like, you know, in a different way, you know, maybe you could argue equally as successful.
You mentioned that your husband is the co-founder of Warby Parker, and I know you've been involved in the company here and there. Can you describe a little bit what it's been like to see them grow, and were there any things that you learned from watching that whole experience that you've applied to Rockets?
Yeah, I mean, everything. It's been so much fun watching them grow, and so much fun, you know, being a part of and watching them, you know, concept execution, because, it's so authentic to who they are. And, you know, there were four co-founders, and there are four co-founders, but four of them were running the business in the beginning. And, you know, they decided together that two of them would run the business, you know, longer term. And, you know, to this day, they're still best friends. And I would say, you know, beyond all of the successes that everybody look at for Warby, of, you know, sort of the multitude of sort of wins that they've had as a business and a brand, I look at the four of them still being best friends today as the biggest success, because that's really hard to do. You know, businesses are really hard to build, and to still, you know, be best friends with who you started it with, I think is an incredible feat. But, you know, listen, like having, you know, my husband, my best friend, also be like my greatest advisor in the world and be building a business in parallel to me building businesses and have a lot of similarities and crossovers. You know, I think that we both learn from each other and both look to each other in times of, you know, doubt or just needing advice and guidance. And it's really fun to be building things that have similarities, but are also each our own. You know, we each have our own businesses, our own sort of careers, but they have a lot of crossovers. And so probably the greatest is that, you know, we both truly understand what each other are going through on a daily basis and never sort of give each other guilt of, you know, why can't you be, you know, here for X, or why do you have to work late, or why do you have that commitment? And at the same time, being able to come home and be like, oh my God, I have this like really hard thing that I'm working through, and like, what do you think? And to be able to talk to somebody who you just trust implicitly, and you don't feel like it's judging you, or you have to like put on a certain air, and you can just have a really candid conversation that is grounded in experience. So it's been so incredible watching their journey. And I can only hope that we can live up to, you know, the precedents that they've set for, you know, all modern consumer brands.
Yeah, it's a company we mention a lot on the show, because they pioneered in a lot of ways many of the concepts that have now become really common, especially in the past couple of years. There's so many ideas that have become built into the DNA of how you do a direct-to-consumer company that came from Warby Parker. In a sense, like, your whole business model probably wouldn't have been feasible without the work that they did, you know, like 8 years ago, or in the beginning. Just the concept of the try-on program in itself was pretty revolutionary, and the idea of the fact that when you sign up for Rockets, you don't have to pay for anything up front is sort of a similar amazing experience that didn't exist 10 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think they've paved the way for how businesses think about customer experience, how, you know, whether that is customer service or the end-to-end customer experience, how businesses think about, you know, transparency and in speaking to their customer the way that they would speak to their best friend, delivering, you know, real end-to-end service and value to the customer, and, you know, really standing for something that as founders and founding teams you really believe in, and always making sure that you feel like you're truly solving a problem. And I think that that is such an important call out, because, you know, there's lots of great ideas, but a great idea is only as good as having an actual problem to solve and a customer that needs what you're building. You know, I think sort of Warby paving the way for customers to say that, you know, this specific product or this specific category shouldn't cost as much as it does, or you should be getting greater value out of it, I think was a great wake-up call for all future brands that came after them of really pushing the envelope to make sure that for every single thing that we're doing, we're delivering value back to the customer.
I'd like to end on maybe a deeper, like, philosophical question, which is that with Rockets, you're so involved in the life of kids who are growing up today. I think that those kids, I'm really inspired by the upcoming generation of kids. They're so creative and have access to so many amazing tools that I think will help them create really amazing innovations that we've never thought of, like the whole Minecraft generation of kids who've been building things since they were kids in this like digital playground is pretty fascinating to me. They also the ones maybe who facing the biggest challenges from like a environmental standpoint or political standpoint. What are you hoping to infuse into this generation with Rockets of Awesome or just as a parent?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as a parent, and what I think has been so exciting to see is that technology has truly made innovation accessible to most. You know, gone are the days where you needed tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to be able to put up a website and run a business. And it's so much fun. You know what? My son is 7 years old and he is learning how to code. And that's incredible to me because I don't know how to code and it seems so foreign and it's very accessible to kids these days. So I love how technology has really enabled accessibility to consumers and particularly to children. And, you know, for us as a brand, you know, we're dedicated and really, really passionate about continuing to celebrate and really support the confidence in kids and looking at, you know, at a very early age, they have such a sense of self and, you know, they're all quirky and they're all a little weird and they're just themselves and they're so proud of it. And how do we as a society learn how to continue to give them the tools to have that confidence and really celebrate that confidence? And we will keep working really hard at Rockets to be able to do everything we can to give the kids the resources and the tools and the platforms to continue to be these magical, unpredictable balls of confidence.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Do you have any insights as someone who's like building a brand that's digital first, but also very close to, you know, very young people? Do you have a sense of what their expectations might be as they grow up, of what the brands of the future should look like for that generation of kids?
I think more than anything, you know, authenticity, and I definitely feel like that word is so overused, but really more that, you know, in order to be a business and a brand, you have to have a reason for being and a truly differentiated reason for being. You can't just be like the brand next door to you, but your color is better or you're, you know, 5 cents cheaper. You have to have a truly differentiated reason. And I think that the consumer is savvier than ever, they're more demanding than ever, they're more fickle, and they expect value and they expect a reason for being. And they are responding to storytelling and hearing, you know, stories of why you exist and wanting to really tie their identities to that brand. And I think that's what we have so much fun with at Rockets is that, you know, we have such a defined point of view of really existing to make the lives of parents easier and to build the confidence and celebrate what real life with kids means. And, you know, being able to continue to differentiate that and dimensionalize it and tell those stories is feels like a lifetime of content and stories for us to connect with the customer on.
Well, I love everything that you're up to. And if people want to check out Rockets of Awesome, they can go to rocketsofawesome.com. I've heard and I've seen you wear the silver jacket. I've heard that some parents are wearing those too. So if you can squeeze into one, they're pretty cool for parents.
Yes, I highly recommend a silver bomber. It is our iconic Rockets of Awesome item. Also, for anyone listening, if they want to use my promo code, which is LoveRachel, R-A-C-H-E-L, then it's free to try the service. So the service free is waived with that promo code. So try it out. You'll love it. It's really, really fun. And I think what as parents, what I love so much is seeing that the parents also really like it as much as the kids do, which to me is always the win-win.
Yeah. And you guys do a great job on Instagram as well. Rockets of Awesome. Is there anything else that you want to plug or people, where can people find you?
Just rocketsofawesome.com and at Rockets of Awesome on Instagram.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Rachel.
Thank you. It was really nice chatting.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, if you got something useful out of it, I would love to hear what that was. Consider writing a short review, could be just a sentence long, by going to iTunes and searching for Well Made. I want to hear it all. I want to hear good, bad. I want to hear your constructive criticisms. I am just trying to make this show as useful as possible for you. So tell us what you think. That is the very best way that you can support the show. Thanks, and see you next time.